my mind, there's no question Alan Mundy is in that category of legend. Alan Mundy and Billy Bright a few years ago released Bright Mundy, which was a collection between the both of them, Billy Bright being the mandolin player most associated with the band Wood and Wire. They've released a new one, a follow-up, I suppose, a couple years later, with some help from the rest of the band Wood and Wire. The new album is called Es Mi Suerte. I caught up with Billy Bright and Alan Mundy in person down in Raleigh, North Carolina, during the week of what I call the International Bluegrass Music Association festivities as a whole. Billy Bright, Alan Mundy will talk about Es Mi Suerte. Very happy to have on Unreal Bluegrass both Alan Mundy and Billy Bright. How are you guys?
Doing well, thank you.
Great to be here.
Good. Alan, you've been on the show several times. You're one of my favorite banjo players, and I say that just to embarrass you and put you off a little bit so I can ask these questions and get responses that nobody else would get.
Fire away.
You were on the program probably most recently when you did the album with Billy Bright, who's sitting here also today, Bright Mundy.
Right. This is actually our second effort together. We have our first one is called Bright Mundy, and it was just Billy and I, no accompaniment at all.
Right.
You know, it was back when bluegrass was good.
By the way, I have to tell you this. Everybody that saw that album cover thought it was out of focus.
Yeah.
And it sort of was, but not for the reasons they thought.
Right.
The individual pictures weren't out of focus.
That's right. Bring them together. I was crossing one eye. Yeah. But we talked about that at length when it came out.
Yes.
And how you met Billy. As a matter of fact, that summer that it came out, I met Billy at Grey Fox.
Right. That's
With your band.
That's
up
right.
There.
I remember.
Yeah. And we just said, hey, it was great. And I love the way that you played. I think Alan has a very unique style. And I recognize your phrasing. Every time I hear a tune, I know it's you. And I thought that your mandolin playing was really complimentary on Bright Mundy. And I don't know how you guys worked that out, but I never asked you about that so much.
Well, Billy is no slouch. You know, I mean, he's a great musician and a great
that's
player.
That's been quoted all around. No yeah. Slouch. That's kind of like
that's
my thing.
That's fake yeah. Praise, they call it.
No, you know, he knows how to play music and make it work. So I don't, it certainly wasn't on my part. I just played the banjo, and he was responsible for the mandolin. So if you like it, he did a great job.
I tell you what, the thing about that, and even on this playing also, Billy, is on mandolin, would never think that you were trying to imitate Alan's playing, although it's a great thing to do. I thought that some of the slides and some of the timing on the slides in your mandolin, I would hear Alan's playing, which is very unique timing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Am I just hearing that? Am I wishing that would happen, or do you think that happened?
No, I won't say that we scrutinized note for note, but I will say that we just, the sort of method we used for tracking or producing, whatever you want to call it, both these records was getting together, sharing our melodies, oftentimes on written paper, and just playing them a lot for a year or more before we start recording them.
Really?
Well, because, I mean, not like, we get together once a week when we can and work on stuff.
You don't live that far apart.
Yeah, we're really close.
No, we're 10 miles apart.
Yeah. And so I think that kind of pre-production stuff lent itself to, you know, me actually learning the song.
So the second one, I'll pronounce the second album as Es Mi Suerte. Does that sound pretty accurate?
That sounds very good, yes.
I looked it up, it means a lot of different things, but tell me what you think it means.
For me, it means it is my fate. Luck is another translation.
I saw luck, yeah.
But fate is what I was going for.
And there is a tune on here with the same name.
Yes.
Did you write that tune with you write so many different melodies, and you have so many strong presentations of melodies and the progressions, and I do stress this a lot. I don't know anybody else that chooses the notes that Alan plays.
Mm-hmm.
There's something different about it. And he hates to hear this, but I tell him this every time, that it's nothing I would expect, except when I hear him, I get in the mode of listening to it. Sam, we've talked about this before. I'm not surprising you by this at all, am
no,
I?
No.
So when you wrote the title cut to this, It Is My Fate, is it there are no words. Let's just do this first. There's no words. There's nobody singing with you. Although you have accompaniment on this one, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
Tell me, Billy, who's playing with you on this?
Well, on this record, it's Dom Fisher plays bass, and he's the bass player in the group that I play with as my full-time gig, which is a band called Wooden Wire.
Right.
And then also joining us on a couple songs on fiddle is Dennis Ludeker, who is one of the Fiddlin' Ludekers.
That's right.
And on banjo, on the additional banjo on one of the songs is our friend Trevor Smith, who's been on your show.
Yes.
Who's a remarkable banjo player that I've known for a really long time in different bands that he was in, but he is also in Wooden Wire.
Trevor has a lot of musical theory behind his banjo playing, and we talked about this as we were coming into the room today, that he has musical training, classical piano, then he decided to become a banjo player. Alan, how does that happen?
You'd have to ask him. I don't know.
And his parents were so accepting of it. Yes, not throw away, 10 years of classical prep and play a banjo. And that was amazing to me, the reaction of his parents that he was going to take this step, and I just thought it was a wonderful encouragement. So he did the first album, Billy Bright, and this one is on Monday's Child Records, right?
Yes.
Before I forget, where do people find that? Besides the fact that I have it right here.
Right. You can get it from almundysbanjocollege.com, or you can get it at a lot of digital sources.
Yeah, if you want a physical copy of the CD, you can get it off Alan's website, and we'll receive all the monies from that. And if you get it off of CD Baby, you can get it, and we'll get some of the monies from that. Or you can download it and stream it. You know, I think you can download it on Amazon and a bunch of the other sites, and then it's on all the other streaming services.
Alan, before we got started, we talked about most of these have not appeared anywhere, but I know that from talking to you earlier, and you jogged my memory, I remember Dapple Patty, which is on this album we'll talk about. And I forgot about Jenny's Desire, but those have been recorded on another...
Yes, I've recorded them before, but never quite in an expanded version. The Jenny's Desire I recorded with Joe Carr many, many years ago, and nobody noticed it, so I thought I'd try it again.
I noticed that I have that album. I wish you would say that.
Well, you know, both these records, also, I mean, Alan was like, and the first record that we did, Alan and I were playing in a several different... When Alan stopped teaching in Levelin and moved back to Wimberley, we were playing in several different bands together. One of them was my band, one of them was his band, and a couple of them were other people's bands, you know. But at one point, Alan said, hey, why don't we just ditch all these guys and record something just the two of us? And then he said, you know, I got all these songs and nobody else will play with me. So that's kind of where this started, you know.
So you did the first Bright Monday, and that was how long ago before you decided to do this one? If you practice for a year, let's say, as you said.
Sure.
Did you have the plan to do a follow-up to Bright Monday right away?
Well, of course. Well, our people demanded it.
Our audience.
Yes. Singular. I'd say it was, the first one was maybe 4 years ago. So we had to let it bubble, you know, and percolate. And then we got together and started working on this material. And like you said, it was a year or so just knocking around tunes and trying them out and recording them and seeing how they felt and seeing what tunes we might want to use some other players on and, you know, just to develop arrangements and all that. So it takes a while. Plus, I'm real busy. You know, I do a lot of gigs and I do a lot of camps, you know, where I'm an instructor. And Billy works with Wooden Wire, and they're in hot, in-demand band right now.
Just had a new album come out this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. That album has great Billy's Wooden Wire, great songwriting, great singing, great playing, great arranging, excellent recording. It's a really masterful piece of work. And then so to find time in between all of this to get together, it just takes time. And it's good. You know, they say the slower you put them together, the slower they fall apart.
Who says that?
They.
I've never heard anybody say that.
Well, I think it was also kind of like we were approaching it. I wanted to approach it anyway from the something that I've never done before, which is record a record in a casual way and take our time on it.
Why not? What does that mean?
Casual way, as far as the
well, as far as like every band I've ever worked in, it's kind of like you get in this mentality of like, let's get it done, you know. And I wanted to kind of give it the time that it deserved. And for me, frankly, learning a lot of these songs took that time, you know.
And actually, a tune or at least one we recorded and listened to it and decided we needed to do it again. So we recorded it yet again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we just took advantage of the, as he says, the leisurely pace we were able to do this with. And, you know, a lot of recording experiences are that you have to go into and book a studio. You're in the studio, you know, and every time the minute hand goes around or the second hand goes around, there's money.
Money.
So, you know, there's a pressure to get it done and to take what you're able to do in the moment, which is can be really wonderful. You know, it's not saying that it's bad. But this way it just gives, like I say, a time to go back and go, well, you know, we need to do this again. It doesn't feel right, so we should do it again.
There's a video out of Oklahoma Bound, which is one of your tunes on this album.
Yes.
And that has, you can see shades of, I now know that that was probably Dom Fisher in the forefront.
Yes. That was
the video.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that's Oklahoma. Is that the first video that's come off of this?
Yes, of this CD.
Yes.
From the CD, we did a video of Alan's arrangement of Green Sleeves with that same group last year. But it's a Christmas,
you know, it's also called...
What Child Is This?
I always call it Whose Child Is This?
In Alan's version, we call it What Key Is This?
Yeah.
Oklahoma Bound is one of your tunes, Alan. There are, Billy, you contribute, just looking through here.
Yeah, a couple songs.
Alan, you write a lot of these things, which I want to talk about. And you also, Goodnight Irene, By the Side of the Road, which is one of my favorite instrumentals on this. That's Brumley, and then you've got Huddy Ledbetter, Leadbelly, I guess. So you most of these things are stuff you guys have originated, but you also go back and borrow some old tunes.
Right. You know, but that By the Side of the Road, you know, a lot of, in bluegrass, when people think about instrumental albums and instrumental playing, they tend to always think about, you know, Foggy Mountain Breakdown or Earl's Breakdown or Rawhide or Bill Monroe instrumentals that are written as instrumental music. But I've always liked songs played instrumentally, you know. And going back to my very first recording, which was Banjo Sandwich, I did an old sentimental country song called Remember Me.
Yes.
And you know,
I learned that. That's when I knew I was never going to be a banjo player. I know that song very well because I could play it if you found the banjo.
Right, right. So I've always liked, you know, song melodies but played instrumentally because I'm not a singer. And By the Side of the Road, my banjo mentor was a great guy named Eddie Shelton, and no relation to the Alan Shelton of the Jim and Jesse fame. But Eddie would play By the Side of the Road, but he always played just the chorus. And all the people that I knew in Texas that knew Eddie, when we played By the Side of the Road, it was always just the chorus. And if you listen to the song proper, it's got a verse that is different than the chorus. And so we did that here. We did the verse and the chorus. And the verse has a lot of syllables. So it was a challenge, you know, as a banjo player playing in a sort of a roll style or a picking style, you know, to get them all in there. So it was a challenge, and I really like it, you know. It's different, but not so different, you know, because it's just a lot of bands do it as a gospel song or a, you know, a social commentary song is the way I see it.
And right after By the Side on the Road on the lineup on the album, I had to look this up, by the way, Going Bodman. I had to look that up. And you have it here. It's an institution.
Mm-hmm.
And it means you're going crazy. And now you filled that in for me here. But I looked it up and I thought, why would you put a tune about going crazy right after this beautiful thing you've just described right as By the Side of the Road?
Well, that's how we think, isn't it? You know, it's just, we had to put it somewhere.
That's true.
You know.
That's true. Tell me a little bit about that tune, because that's one that you wrote.
You know, a lot of tunes are written like this. I went to a workshop that Jens Kruger gave, and then also Bill Emerson, and they both, they said it in different ways, but it's the same thing. Is Jens said, you play a note, and what a musician does is ask what comes next. And Bill's version was, well, I'm sitting around the house, and I come up with a little lick that sounds cool to me, and then I go, well, what goes with that? And so I was just sitting around, and I came up with the very opening little line, and it's got kind of an odd harmony, and I do it all, although Trevor joins in later, the basic harmony is just all one banjo. And I did it all, and it just sounded sort of cranky to me. And so you ask the question, what comes next? And basically, I mean, I'll give it away, it's the same thing over and over, but it, all you do is move the position around. And so you wind up with this same little motif. I'll tell it, it's G, A-flat, G, F, G, A-flat, F-sharp, G.
You know, man. And it's over now.
It's over, it. Yeah. That's the kind of guy I am. But it's just the same little thing over and over again.
So why does that make you go crazy, though?
Well, it's pretty...
It's the B section.
Yeah.
He hasn't gotten to the B section.
Okay,
yeah. It has a flat five in all the chords. So that's a kind of a... nerve-wracking note, you know, it's so, and it's just that it goes backwards and forwards through these chord changes fairly rapidly, and you had asked that it puts you in mind of another
jazz tune. I heard something in there, yeah.
And it has sort of a sensibility. Thelonious Monk has a tune called Well, You Needn't, and it has a little bit of that, except it's even... hyper. At least he gave a whole measure for every chord, and ours is only a half measure, so we kind of...
And his timing, many people thought his timing was halfway to being crazy. Because he was, it was, I must have been the hardest guy to play with ever was Monk, because the timing on the tunes were just not something you could really, you know, this. You know.
Right, oh yeah, no.
Well, it's like this, where, I mean, none of the chords are on the beat, or the backbeat. It's a, you know, I mean, some of them are, but yeah, there's so much anticipation and stuff like that, that if you don't know where the, it's sometimes, it's like that, you're playing to a pulse, but you're not playing on the pulse.
That's the best
way
to describe
it. It's like an implied pulse.
I'll tell you what he's talking about, is I got in the office after listening to this, and I thought, because I couldn't pick it up in my head. I had that feel, and I wrote to you, and I said, what am I hearing? Is it Monk or is it like an old Gillespie tune? No, Dizzy Gillespie. I was leaning toward Monk, and you wrote back and explained it that way, and all you say it's different, which I understand that. But the feel I got from it was that I see Monk at a piano, you know, like everybody's trying to follow his timing, mm-hmm. and it was in his head, and it was perfect for what he was doing, but that's what I got. Right.
One other quick thing, just
yeah, sure.
to be, is on the solos, or my solos anyway, right at the very first, I take my picks off and play just with my thumb. So if there's a tonal quality that is different, it's because I'm playing, you know, the flesh of my thumb on the string rather than picks.
Okay.
So
I'll go listen again for that.
Yeah, it's a little softer quality. Okay. And so I like it a lot.
It's great. Bill, you wrote, I have two tunes on here with you.
Uh-huh.
Wild Heron and Mom's Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to Alan. Let's let him catch his breath for a minute.
Sure.
Let's talk about your tunes. Not that you're playing, but the tunes that you did was Wild Heron and Mom's Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to go through every tune, but I didn't want to let people think you were just here playing Marvelous Mandolin.
Well, what would you like to know about them?
Well, I mean, here I'm looking at the notes here now. Billy played a three-part song for his wife.
Yes. Oh, well, this song, you know, yes, and that's...
You got married wherever this song came about.
That's right. This song was, when you write instrumental songs, sometimes the inspiration comes before the name, you know?
Okay.
And I think in this song, it was, this was sort of a song inspired by, you know, things in life like hot love, cold love, and medium love, and a three-part song that has a little bit of all that.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
When I played it for my wife, though, she helps me sort of complete my thoughts sometimes, and or a lot of times, and When I played it for her, she imagined this lake, this spot. Place that she described, which reminded me of where we got married, and I thought Wild Heron was better than the working title that I had going on. So we
which
went with
was
that.
What? Hot Cold Hot Love?
I can't
cold.
Tell you what that was.
And then Mom's Waltz. I always expect a waltz from Alan somewhere on a recording, and then I didn't know until just now the credits, and you wrote Mom's Waltz.
Well, Alan, you know, the king of the banjo waltz. It does. I not a lot of people play waltzes, but I love waltzes, especially. I think they're very conducive to the mandolin, obviously, I guess. But this is, I called it Mom's Waltz because I wrote it when my mom was having a surgery, and I just sat down and, it came out that way, and then I made it plural to
all the moms.
Accounts for all the moms.
It belongs to all the moms.
Yes.
Because the apostrophe is after the S.
Yes. Right, it belongs to all the moms, and my wife, and my mom, my grandma, everybody.
Okay.
They all deserve a song.
The Oklahoma Bound, I know, was yours, Alan. And then you mentioned this, and I was a big fan of Slim Ritchie and Ridge Runner Records back in the day.
Sure.
And you get to the title cut, and it's a tribute to Alan's friend, the lifetime mentor, your friend, Slim Ritchie.
Yes.
And connect that up for me. I think I know what you're... I was such a big fan of Ridge Runner Records, and so many things you did were that really caught my eye was on Ridge Runner, and Slim was just a character beyond compare.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So what is it about Is My Fate or Es Mi Suerte that makes it a tribute?
Well, when I left my house and walked out with my banjo and guitar in hand, the first person I met was Slim. I was 14, and I'll say he was 24. He owned a music store in Norman, Oklahoma. And I walked in there, and he and I have been friends ever since, till he died just 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I would sit in the hospital with him and just be with him. And so I wrote this as sort of an elegy for not only Slim, but, the older we get, the more friends we see pass on. And it's just sort of that moment. And also Slim, I won't say he taught me everything I know about sort of harmonies and connecting up things and doing things, but he taught me a lot. And so I wanted to do a tune, and this is very thick with harmony stuff, and I really, really thought it turned out really, really well. Dennis Ludeker played fiddle, just an accompaniment fiddle. It was just gorgeous, for me, and Billy on the mandolin and Dom on the bass, and it's really a heartfelt tribute to Slim and to all my good friends.
He was an individual.
He was.
There was nobody
one
else
of a kind.
Like,
one of a kind.
You would know that better than me, but
yeah,
nobody would do the stuff that he did.
No. And he, his name when I met him was Mike Ritchie, and then he moved away from Norman, and then we got back together. And when we got back, he was Slim. And I asked him, I said, what's this Slim about? And he said, I just decided that I didn't like myself. I didn't like what I had become. And so I changed my whole thing around, and I got rid of Mike, and I'm going to be Slim. And basically, he told me... poor Slim had been married several times. He was married 4 times. And he said the last time when he married his wife, Francie, he said the only reason to get married is for the fun of it. And that's the way he lived his life.
Okay.
He said his life was just about for the fun of it. And so if he did whatever he thought was going to be fun, he acted in any way he thought would be fun, he played music that he thought was fun.
There's a lot of what I would call Django or Gypsy Jazz-inspired stuff.
Okay.
Is that Western?
Well,
his guitar playing.
Yes, yeah. Early on when I knew him much younger, he was a pretty well straight-ahead Barney Kessel, Tal Farlow, and very fine at it. But... the later years, he was more, as you're describing,
yeah.
Django, and even Les Paul. I mean, because Les Paul would do a lot of sort of if I said attention-getting devices rather than just purely musical things, Slim would, if he thought it would get an attention, he would do it. And so he had a group there in Austin for many years called the Jitterbug Vipers. Mm-hmm. And they did what he called Viper music, which is basically, I think, drug
music. Did you know Slim?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's reefer music.
Drug music from the 20s and 30s is what Viper music was.
If you're a Viper, there's that song. Yeah. Famous.
You know, and I get, every time I get low, I get high.
Yeah.
You know, which I think Ella Fitzgerald maybe had done. But anyway,
well, she should have if she didn't.
Yeah. So he was really, really into having a good time, and he shared that with me, and I saw the result of it in his life, and I thought, man, here's a guy that's really happy.
Well, it seemed you're talking about it seemed like he, when I first met him in Austin in the mid-late 90s, he had a band called the Jazz Pharaohs, and that was when he was doing more of that, like you were talking, the Barney Kessel, that kind of like jazz stuff, and then he just kind of like, later on, like 10 years later, there was this huge Django scene going on in Austin. He just kind of like, you know, became part of that and, you know, just like whatever was.
They had better parties.
Right. Why did his wife always play with her back to the stage?
You know, you'll have to ask her that.
All right.
You know, it, in a sense, it was all part.
We're getting off topic, but I always wanted to know this.
Okay.
Fascinating stuff.
In a sense, you know, if you saw Slim dressed up, he would dress in attention-getting ways.
True.
And he would play his guitar in attention-getting ways. And I think she sort of picked up on this idea that I'll just turn my back to the audience, and that'll be a way of just recognizing whose band it is, in the sense of, oh, they're the Jitterbug Vipers. She always turns her back to the audience, and he always does this.
And yeah, Slim and Francie sort of defy that thing about opposites attract. I mean, she still is, and Slim is very much a...
That helps explain
a character. They were both characters.
No question.
And developed that, you know, and went out of their way to be characters, in a sense, only in comfortable ways. They didn't, you know, Slim never did anything that was unauthentic. You know, he just enjoyed everything he did, and... let it all be out there and known.
Yeah. Right, well, I appreciate him and the music you did on Ridge Runner with him.
Yes, yes.
And I don't know how many things are left available on that Ridge Runner records, but I loved all that stuff.
That's a good question. While we're mentioning Slim, we should mention that we're playing at Slim Fest. There's a festival in Slim's honor that happens in Terlingua, Texas in February. Annually now.
Yeah, this will be the fourth annual Slim Fest.
I guess he's been gone 5 years then.
Yeah. And is held out in Terlingua, Texas, which is far west Texas near Big Bend National Park. And it's basically out in the desert in this little town called Terlingua. Used to have, and may still do, a big chili cook-off there, but it's just this little desert. Right on the Rio Grande down there, and Slim used to go down there actually he and I started it. We would go out there every Christmas and play at the Starlight Theater in Terlingua, Texas, and I dropped out and he continued that and, you know, bought land out there and developed a following out in Terlingua. So when he died, they started this tribute to him.
I bet that's an interesting crowd.
It's a wonderful crowd. It's Slim's crowd.
It's great. And it's, you know, I don't know how to explain it. So I'll stop there.
Thanks for the Slim stories. I want to get back to Monday Night Waltz. I do. What's something else you want to say about
it? No.
Okay. Monday Night Waltz. I do associate Alan's playing. I think the really, really pretty stuff is the waltz. And the slower stuff that Alan does, which is so different than, like you mentioned, you weren't trying to downplay anyone, but people think of banjos as fast and lots of notes. I think the waltz, what you do on waltzes on Monday Night Waltz is indicative of what I think of as a style that you're always going to be remembered for. You're not gone yet.
Oh, no.
But that slow, beautiful, gorgeous notes that you play.
Well, good. I'm at that age where those are just right for me.
Go ahead. Monday Night Waltz. Tell me about that, then I'm going to let you go.
Well, you know, I'm from Oklahoma, in Texas and Oklahoma is very, very big in fiddling. And one of the waltzes, and I've went to school with and played with Byron Burline for a long time and went to fiddle contests with him, and they play waltzes. And one of the waltzes that got played with some frequency was an old song called the Wednesday Night Waltz. And so I was interested in learning that. And to get a better sense of it, I went on YouTube and discovered that every fiddle player makes up their own Wednesday Night Waltz. Basically, you know, there's a sort of a standard chord progression, and they just play their own notes. And there's actually a very old recording from 1929 with a vocal, you know, has words and melody that bears little resemblance to the Wednesday Night Waltz that the fiddle players play. So I just got this idea, well, you can make up your own notes to this thing. So rather than calling it the Wednesday Night Waltz, I call it the Monday Night Waltz.
That's clever. You know, until you finish the story, because the people are thinking, it's your name, Monday. And
right.
People may be thinking as they listen, it's Monday night, but it's Monday, your name.
Right. It's pretty clever of me, isn't it?
It's very clever. When you've been known to be that way in the past. Good Night Irene in the last cut is an old, is everybody hears versions of Good Night Irene.
Mm-hmm.
This one's different. Tell me a little bit why you.
Well, it's, at jam sessions and any kind of get-togethers of musicians, I always like to play the last song as Good Night Irene, just because it seems terribly appropriate. And
plus, you're trying to get people to leave.
Well, they don't have to leave, but you're announcing that they probably should.
Yeah, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
So this is, Billy and I did this as sort of like the last song around a campfire jam session, you know, at Slim Fest. You know,
yeah.
This is so we did it as the last song, and it's another waltz again. And also, Roland White used to sing this, and Byron knew it, and we used to play it at Country Gazette.
I was going to say, you're going back to Country Gazette.
Yeah, just in the dressing room. We never did it live. We just play it backstage. I always liked it, and it's a very, very popular song. The Weavers did it in the 1950s, and had a big hit, and Ry Cooder has done it, and I think even the rock blues guitar guy, Clapton, Eric Clapton even recorded it.
You know, I will say that he did, because he's probably recorded everything.
I think so.
You have
but
a better recollection than I do.
It's just a quiet, nice little closing to the CD, I think.
I have a copy of this now, Estimus Huerte. When's it going to be available to all the common folks? Is it available already?
It's available as we speak.
On all the places that Billy mentioned?
Yeah, it's right. As of like a week ago.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
So
yeah.
It's very
brand new.
Current.
Are you, now, you're taking time out of your visit to Raleigh, North Carolina, during what I call the IBMA week. Are you guys going to be playing down here somewhere?
I'm going to be playing a bunch of stuff with the band, and we have Alan sitting in with us. Tonight, Tuesday night, at the workshop stage at the convention center, like 9:30 or something. But then I can't remember. I think he's sitting in with us again. But we'll be all over. We've got something every day through the IBMA, and then we'll be playing at the street fair. And
you've been handed a cheat sheet.
Look at this. Yeah. So Tuesday night with Alan, and then we'll be at the Lincoln Theater tomorrow. I mean Wednesday, and at the Poorhouse Wednesday, and then at the California Bluegrass Association Room on Thursday, and the Charm City Showcase on Friday, and then the Harget Street Stage Saturday, which is part of the, you know, the Street Fest.
Yeah, okay.
Celebration, which is always a fun thing to do. We've done that the last few years.
Poorhouse puts me in mind of my parting mention. Alan Mundy told me years ago, he tells everybody this, that he used to meet the new bluegrass musicians coming off of the bus and make them sign a vow of poverty.
Yeah. To be in the bluegrass industry, you have to sign on and take a vow of poverty.
Yeah.
No relation to this poorhouse, but I remember when you said that, I thought, how many young players really get what he's saying? Because you can't get more successful and more acknowledged than Alan that. But he wanted to let everybody know that, just so you know where you're going on this.
Right.
Well, yeah, I remember working the first one of the first times I was working with Alan with the band, what he said is, for what we do, this is the top.
We're there.
We're there. Yes. I love this album. Yeah, and thanks for taking the time out of it. I know it's a busy schedule for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Yeah, I don't have that much of it.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks for listening.
Billy Bright, Alan Monday. It's been a blast. Esme Swerp is the new album. I have it. I'm happy now. All right, man. I'll let you guys go back to business.
All right.